I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Fans and a Pro on this beautiful Friday afternoon. I am Deuce McAllister, but I have a special guest, and I'm going to throw it down to the sidelines to him.
Special is a strong word.
Well, I mean special as far as for Fans and a Pro.
I like to think this is kind of a soft opening for the Friday show that will take over for this
I'm not going to get into that, but I'm going to still throw it down to the sideline. Or over to the sideline to Jeff Nowak, and could you give me my River Parish report? Your overall thoughts today?
Today?
Yeah, just today. Not the season. That's later on. That's our fantasy update. Because you know we're missing one person. Charlie, I know you're are manning the back of the house for us, but we're just missing the black cat to make this just truly weird, and that's Robert Carroll.
That's true. If he was hanging out, you know, whispering sweet nothings into my ear all show long like we do on the sideline. It is funny. You don't even realize this. Throughout the course of the game, y'all are talking, and me and Robert are having like a back and forth about what y'all are saying, and you have no idea that's even happening. Well, I need you to understand that.
Well, I can imagine that. I mean, just truly, trust me, I can truly imagine that, and, you know, we get fussed at about different things, and, you know, some of them we can control, and some we can't, but, you know, it's always, you know, anytime we can bring the Saints game to the listeners and the viewers that are listening, we do truly, truly enjoy it. But I am joined by Jeff Nowak, my normal co-host, and our, obviously our friend Mike Haas is under the weather. And I'm going to claim it now. No, Mike, I did not get you sick. I'm going to say that. No, Mike, I did not get you sick. He is under the weather. Hopefully he is feeling a little bit better today. We text earlier and he was saying, hey, at least I got my meds now. And so, get well soon. But Jeff, just to talk a little bit about, you know, just the season wrap. Mm-hmm. And you know, we look at what LSU has done in a transfer portal. We talk about a little about the college football game. You had one last night, the Fiesta Bowl, Ole Miss versus Miami.
It's a heck of a game.
Yeah, and then you have tonight, we have Indiana versus Oregon, which is a kind of a repeat, a mm-hmm. game that has been played already.
Possibly the top two picks in the draft.
Possibly. One is on the fence mm-hmm. About coming out. Oregon quarterback on the fence about coming out. Also, our Pelicans are in Washington tonight, and they play at 6 o'clock. You can find them or catch them here on the Big 870 when we wrap up. Pre-game starts at 5:30, and that is a game that the Pelicans desperately, I'll put desperately out there, need. And then I want to get your opinion on the report that was, filed today, and it was kind of known in some circles as far as here in New Orleans that a couple of guys aren't available. But I do think some moves will be made, Jeff, and I just want to get your quick thoughts on that as well.
Right now, you want to talk about the Pelicans?
I love talking basketball.
Okay, let's do it.
Pelicans, I love talking Saints. I'll go all over the place.
Oh, no. I just want to make sure. I want to make sure we're on the same page because, yeah, I'm fascinated by what's going to happen with the Pelicans at the trade deadline. John Morant, who's also, you know, always going to be kind of inextricably linked with Zion because they were mm-hmm. the number 1-2 picks in that draft. Memphis is talking about potentially trading John Morant, which is why it feels even stranger that, you know, this idea that Zion's not on the trade market. It just, I don't know, how many times do you have to run it back with this same group and have it not work out before you decide, hey, we're going to kind of bring this thing back down to the studs? I don't know. Like, and it's tough because you look at it and you see Zion's playing well. Zion's not the issue with this team, but does the build work?
Well, yeah, the build out of the team, what you have. Right. I mean, and the other problem is when you start looking at numbers, though, and the thing with Ja, I don't think his is injuries. Some may be injuries, but I think his may be he's probably outgrown Memphis in a sense, if that can be said. And I don't think he's a favor of management / coaching.
No, and Memphis is playing well, you know, without him. right? And that's not something you can say for the Pelicans. I think that's the biggest difference is the Grizzlies have seemed to found something with the rest of that group. And the Pelicans just, I don't know if they have the star that they need that drives winning. And one thing about Zion that's kind of bothered me for the last several years is, you know, where is the jump shot? Where is the development in his game that brings you to the point that's like, oh yeah, this is a kind of team functioning around a superstar, where it's like you get into these games and there's still very obvious ways you're going to take Zion away, which is anything more than 8 feet from the rim,
yeah, pack the
let
paint.
Him have it.
Pack the paint.
And it becomes difficult to play. You know, your offense kind of bogs down because, you know, you cannot do basic NBA sets when they're just going to operate like that. And, you know, and so you take the ball out of his hands. And then what is, can you have a star player on your team that becomes a liability in terms of spacing constantly? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think it just you have to be a lot more creative offensively. Yeah, that's what it forces. And then you've got to have some shot makers, and that's the other problem with the Pelicans. You don't have enough shot makers.
You also don't have a coach in the sense of, like, okay, you have James Borrego, and there's a long time to go with an interim coach, right?
James Borrego wants that job. That's why. I mean, even if it's 40 games, you know, They still have obligation to try to play. It's not like they packed it in.
That would be like the equivalent of an NFL team firing their coach after like week three.
Yeah, week three.
Yeah.
Yeah, week three, and now the runway for the interim guy is, hey, this is what you have to do. And so we'll dive a little bit more into the Pelicans, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. You know, we do have
wild card. I just want them to win, man. That's all I want. I want the Pelicans to win.
Me and you both. We do have wild card weekend that kicks off this weekend, and, you know, some pretty good slates of games. It really starts tomorrow, 3 o'clock. Rams, they play the Panthers, and then after that you have the Packers and Bears. On Sunday, I guess it's a triple header. Bills at Jaguars, kickoff at noon, followed by the 49ers and Eagles, and then you have the Chargers and Patriots. Monday night, Houston versus the Steelers, and so that will be the playoff as far as that's the kickoff for the playoffs. And today, we also have Catherine Terrell that'll join us at 4:35. She'll give us the Saints season review and, you know, what to look for this offseason. And then Sam Brickhouse will join us, former Tulane linebacker and Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and data scientist. Sam will be joining us at 5:25. Get us a little bit of the analytics, see what they say about college football and the wild card weekend matchups so far. And you can give us a call or shoot us a text here. We're excited just to be able to talk a little football from 4 to 6 and we're talking sports in general. And so I know we talked a little bit about the games, the college football games. Jeff, I want to get your opinion. And, you know, people think, and I want to put this out here, I'm not upset about Ole Miss as far as losing yesterday's game. I knew that was going to be a tough game.
Yeah.
And it was really styles of plays. And it was a contrast of styles of plays. And if you followed Ole Miss football this year, like, you know, not just the last couple of weeks or in the playoffs, the one Achilles heel this season was defense. That's where the investment was not made. And once you scored with 3 minutes on the clock, it was just like you're hoping for just something weird to happen, because that was the only way Miami wasn't going to score. Or they scored too soon,
right,
and your offense gets the ball back and you're able to go down there and kind of steal it at the end.
What truly killed Ole Miss was not that Miami was going to score. It was how they were going to score, which is that Miami team runs the ball, man. And I think what you saw in that game is why, like, if I ever had to pick, hey, do I want an explosive offense or do I want an offense that's going to lean on you and run the ball, I'm taking that the latter every time, because you saw the second half of that game. That final drive, the defense was gassed.
They were gassed. They were done.
That last – when Carson Beck ran into the end zone, I don't know his name, 51, he was laying there.
Xavier Harris, 6'8", 350.
He was laying there with like a turtle on his back.
He was done.
He was exhausted.
Yeah, he was done, right? And he will be a guy that probably – a first or second or third. I don't think he'll be a first
player.
No, he'll be a second or third rounder, you know, because of his size. But I mean, you look at him in that play and it's just like, wait, this guy's going to the NFL?
Yep.
But he was done. But that was the thing. You don't have the depth as far as defense. You just don't have the size to play a team like Miami who's going to lay on you.
When you can run the ball, you can control the pace of the game. You can control when you score. You can control the clock. You can do everything you need to do. When you rely on big plays, explosive plays, you just got to trust that it's going to work out for you.
Well, another thing is you can't get behind the sticks either.
That's true.
You know, a couple times it was even third and long situation, and they were still overcome it just because, you know, the mistakes by Ole Miss or lack of tackling there by Ole Miss. I mean, but that's the only thing. If you're going to have that type of grinded out mentality, you can't get behind the sticks.
So, no doubt.
You know, it'll be intriguing. We'll talk a little bit about the Indiana-Oregon. I want to get your perspective on that game. We'll take a quick break here. You're listening to Fans in the Pro with Deuce and Jeff here on WWL.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome back to Fans and the Pro. Deuce McAllister and Jeff Nowak here joining you from 4 to 6. Give us a call at 504-260-1870 or shoot us a text at the WWL text line as we chat a little bit more. Before we went to break, we talked about the we were talking about the Ole Miss Miami Fiesta Bowl. Wanted to get your thoughts on this Oregon Indiana that game, and it's technically what the Sugar Bowl, if I remember correctly, and then you know a Peach Bowl, Sugar Bowl was here in New Orleans. It's technically the Peach Bowl. And then the finals will be down in Miami on the 19th. But I just want to get your thoughts on this, the matchup tonight.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's, you know, anytime you have a quarterback matchup like this, it's going to be a game. I will say, like, the college football playoff has a problem with blowouts in semifinal matchups. We didn't get one last night. And I don't know. I kind of feel like this is the Hoosiers' year. You
feel a blowout, or you feel it's not going to be a close game?
I mean, what's the difference?
I mean, 10 points. 10 points. I still feel it's close.
I like India. I think Fernando Mendoza is just operating at a high level.
Yeah.
You know, and you give a guy like that extra time to prepare, and I think that's always a big factor in these matchups. Is you know you're not going week to week, right? Like you got time to kind of figure this all out.
But with their last game only being last week, I mean, it's a seven-day split right now.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, a seven-day split. But what's interesting is they can go back and look at – this is not a I don't want to call it – basically a common opponent, because you can go back and look at that first matchup.
The matchup you already had.
You can look at that first matchup. But what's interesting to me, maybe the lack of running ability. I know there's a couple of questionable key players for Oregon. How about this? They may only have – two true tailbacks available, and of that two true tailback, one is a true game time decision. They moved two defensive players from last week, two guys that were on defense to the offensive side of the ball.
So you're saying that's not a good thing?
Well, do you know one guy that left Tulane that is redshirting now, or took a, you know, basically a redshirt this year?
Yes.
Guess what position he plays?
Running back.
And one of the issues was he couldn't get snaps. You know, couldn't get snaps. And whether it was whatever happened, you know, whatever happened, he wasn't involved early on. And so he wanted to take a red shirt. And that is a position where they have two true tailbacks available tonight, and one is a true game time decision for Oregon. And they literally moved two defensive players. I think one played safety and one linebacker that played, obviously, football. The tailback position in high school, and they have practiced this past week with the running backs.
It's interesting. I guess, you know, this is something I don't know. Are you allowed to say, hey, I don't want that redshirt anymore, I want to play in the college football playoff, or does that mean you're just done?
Like, no, like because no, I think the relationship soured so bad that I don't even think that
that's interesting.
You know, because you can. So with so many opt-outs happening earlier, you know, not just this year, but in the past, the NCAA allowed for that redshirt year or guys that normally would not be available to not count.
Interesting.
So guys that, you know, playing in the playoffs or even a bowl, it doesn't put you over your limit. So how about this? Let's say you got a guy that you're redshirt and played four games and you make it, he could possibly get, what, three more games?
Right.
As a freshman and still be considered a redshirt.
And it's a bummer because, you know, I think Tulane could have used Mekhi this year.
Yeah. I mean, they still had some pretty good backs, but sure, I think in overall picture, if he's available, I think you'll use him 100%. But, I mean, one of the biggest stages, a guy like with his talent, not possibly or not being available, definitely hurts that Oregon matchup. And I'm kind of like you. When I looked at it and just digging into it, the average age of that Indiana roster.
Yeah.
He's 23 years old.
It's wild.
23. The average age of the guys that are playing are mostly fifth-year seniors on that roster. And so, yes, they do play some young guys. I'm not taking it away. But just like you talked about, from being a mature player, it's not even close. It's not even close. And so they have a good system in place as far as a coaching system and a staff, but they have older players. And so for them, it's about just going out and executing. You know exactly what you're going to get.
You know, I have a question for you, and I'm curious, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Do you think Tyler Shough, his success this year, and even Bo Nix last year, you know, Michael Penix was 24 when he came to the league. Do you think teams are going to start erring a little more toward, hey, we don't need to bring in the 21, 22-year-old kid. Like, it almost seems better off to let them take a little bit more time in college and develop, even like a Carson Beck. I think he's in like year 6 or 7.
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly that doesn't feel like a disadvantage as much as people want to play it out, right?
I mean. But you want my honest opinion?
Yeah.
No, give me the young hot guy. Yeah, give me the young hot guy just because I can get a couple more years out of him. I can get a couple more years out of him, particularly if I've got a roster that I feel like that he can come in and I'm a quarterback away. An older guy helps me because he's been there, done that. I don't have to worry about him off the field in a sense. And then some of the looks he's already seen, he should have plenty of experience in those systems. But if I got a guy that, you know, he's got that it, I want that younger guy.
The counterpoint, if you got a guy who comes in is ready to contribute right away and you don't have to wait that 2-3 years development time, you get to take advantage of that rookie scale contract, and that's a cheat code.
It is definitely a cheat code, and you'll see a lot more teams probably going that route if they like the prospect.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking top three in the draft, that's one thing. If you're talking second round.
Correct. We're going to go take a break quick, and we got Kat Terrell coming back just to give us ESPN reporter. She's going to give us the Saints season review and the look at the offseason. This is Fans in the Pro with Deuce and Jeff. Welcome back to Fans in the Pro, Deuce and Jeff here, and I do want to apologize. I know that I've butchered everybody's name. We do have Miss Catherine Terrell, and you can find her at @Cat_Terrell online. She is the ESPN Nation Saints reporter. Catherine, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
We're doing pretty good. Doing pretty good for a Friday. It's been a beautiful day outside. You better enjoy it because I hear that the weather is going to be changing drastically. So if you got anything that you're trying to do, you better get it done now.
It's going to be a great weather weekend, right? Except for the rain tomorrow, it's going to be in the 70s. You know, feels like April, right? May, June. Every other month here.
rain and wind in the forecast. Rain and wind in
it's
the forecast.
It's not golf weather.
So no, they're definitely not golf. Not happy about that, but that's another subject. But, Kat, I want to get your take on this Saints season, this past season, and kind of the outlook of what things look like for you and just your overall perspective of, you know, where this team has to kind of get better and some of the things that they did have some success with and, you know, just listening to Mickey and, you know, just his press conference and, you know, just his overall thoughts and get your impression of everything.
Yeah, you know, I was actually thinking about Callan and Mickey's press conference today and just how the tone of it was so different from last year. That's a good thing. There's a lot of optimism around Tyler Shough. As Mickey said, he'd have to be in a coma not to realize all this optimism. It does make me wonder if, you know, the way that the team performed at the end of the season and the optimism around the rookie quarterback is kind of masking some of the other issues the Saints had at the beginning of the season. I do think there is a lot to be positive about, but, you know, I do think that it's going to be an interesting offseason to see what the team feels like they have to fix versus kind of what people think the team has to fix just a few days after the season ended.
Yeah, you know, it was funny kind of hearing Mickey try to kind of like tap the brakes on that, because he understands, right? Like, you know, there's still a developmental process with this roster and with a young quarterback who started 9 games. And, you know, it's going to be really difficult to kind of tamp down those expectations. And that's the challenge of ending a season the way you did and going into a season where there's going to be excitement and expectations. And you love that for the fans and for the team, but you got to deliver on it. You know, you show up week one and lose in a bad way. Suddenly, well, what happened? And that's always a difficult stage. You'd rather be there than the alternative, but it's tough. You know, we were in there on Monday. It's always interesting clean out day and the energy. And, you know, it's been the last 4 seasons, right? You're talking about 7-10, 9-8, 5-12, now 6-11. But the energy from everyone in that room felt worlds different, despite the record being pretty similar. What were the vibes you got, you know, talking to Tyler, to Shuck, talking to Cam Jordan, talking to all these guys, and how do you think that's going to impact the offseason in terms of, you know, just the buy-in from everybody?
Yeah, you know, this team has said over and over and over again that they're very close and that they've bonded a lot, and teams say that every year. They kind of have to, right? You know, they're not going to say during a season this team is not close. But I do remember walking in the locker room on Monday and just watching all these different groups, position groups, talk to each other. And, you know, because sometimes it can kind of get segregated by position group. But, you know, everyone was talking to each other. Everyone was in a good mood. Everyone just seemed kind of happy. And I think a large part of that was the optimism that they ended the season on a high note despite losing to Atlanta. I think the circumstances of that Atlanta game were always going to be tough for them to win, and I think they understood that too. So I don't think they were down on themselves. And so it makes me believe them that they are close. I think this rookie class is close, which is great moving forward because they're talented. I just wonder, you know, how do you take that closeness and optimism and move it into next season? Because you always expect it just to be something where you pick up where you left off, and that's the biggest challenge. I think Cam said that the other day. You can't just pick up where you left off. You have to start all over again. So that'll be interesting this summer.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think, you know, a lot of times you have some success at the end of the year and everyone thinks that it carries over, and that's really not possible just because the relationships will be new. You have to be able to have some chemistry. But I want to get your take on what you think this team, you know, if you had one side or offense and defense, if there was one position group or thing that this team had to do this offseason, just wanted to get your take on what that has to be, offense and defense.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be writing about that on ESPN.com for tomorrow. I kind of broke down, you know, all three phases of the game. You know, if you want to talk overall improvement, I think special teams jumps out immediately. I think they're going to have to overhaul almost the entire special teams unit, or at least figure something out, because statistically they got worse in almost every category. I think there's a lot of optimism with Charlie Smith. So that's the one bright spot moving forward. I think punter is going to be scrutinized and Kroger's a free agent. But if you're just thinking of top need that comes to my mind, people might disagree with me, but I think they need to draft a wide receiver. And I think that needs to be one of the top things they look at, because you can't go through a season with, you know, just Chris Olave and then the mixture of, you know, Kevin Austin and backup wide receivers. So that's my top need for now.
You know, and just sticking on the offense, you know, Tyler Shuck, it was kind of a revelation when he got in there. I don't know if anyone really knew what to expect. We saw him in preseason and he looked like there was upside, but I don't think he looked like anything like he did in week 14 in terms of the confidence that he operated with. You know, what are your expectations for him moving forward, and just, you know, going into this offseason, what do you want to see him improve at? Like, where do you think the biggest room for growth is with the young quarterback?
I think the most impressive thing about Chuck to me is, one, he had an ability to elevate his receivers. You know, I just kind of touched on that. But you look at the last week of the season, you know, he was throwing touchdown passes to Ronnie Bell and Kevin Austin and guys that people didn't know. And that is a lot harder to do than you would think. I think it's been several years since the Saints had a quarterback that could elevate his receivers to be better. Now, a lot of quarterbacks can play well if they have good pass catchers, but the opposite, like with Drew Brees making people better, that's tough. And also, I thought that his ability to bring the team back in the fourth quarter several times, actually, that's a tough quality, too, to have. Not every quarterback has that. So that's what I was impressed by. But I think Chuck just needs to keep doing exactly what he started doing once he got here last year, making connections with his receivers, which he did. He plans to work out with them again this year. And just keep growing as a leader. But on the field, I think he needs to improve the amount of sacks he took. I think that was way too high this year. A lot of factors. It wasn't just him. But, you know, if that number stays as high as it did this year, he's going to get hurt next year. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's hard to play a full season if you're getting tackled that many times. I think when you look at it, aggregate starting every game, it would have been around 55 total roughly if that's the case. And so it's hard to last if you're on the ground that many times. I want to get your opinion, you know, before we let you go, I want to get your opinion of the playoffs. You know, Wild Card Weekend kicks off this weekend. And, of course, we know the Saints aren't in it. But, you know, just your overall thoughts on that, you know, whether it's Wild Card Weekend and or just the playoffs in general.
Well, I definitely got humbled a little bit because when I came into the season, we were all asked to pick who was going to be in the Super Bowl, and I said the Ravens and the Eagles. So the Ravens humbled me a little bit. I definitely thought they would have a better season than they did. I think a lot of people thought that. The most interesting team to me, I think the Niners are a really interesting team. The Bears have been a huge surprise this year. I didn't think they were going to be as good as they are. And, you know, the Seahawks have had an amazing season. So I'm really intrigued by some of these games. I'm trying to think of which game tomorrow I'm looking forward to the most. Probably Green Bay and Chicago. But also, I think that Eagles-Niners game is going to be great to watch on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the Eagles game and 49ers, you know, it's almost an attrition game. You know, which guy for the 49ers is going to be well enough? You know, they've been injuries have been ridiculous with them. And then the Eagles, you never know who's going to show up, you know, offensively, who shows up, and defensively, can you get off the field? And so definitely should be intrigued. You look at the Bears, Packers, and, you know, can the new head coach come over and really seal the deal? He's got that team playing really, really well, and, you know, it'll be intriguing to see that matchup.
Yeah, like I said, the Bears have been a huge surprise this year. I didn't know what to make of Ben Johnson. Sometimes it's just a crapshoot as to whether elevating these coordinators and bad coaches is going to work out. And man, did he take this team and really make it something. So you got to give credit to him. And also, you know, I know the last few years he hasn't, you know, had a lot of fans down here, but I think you got to give credit to Dennis Allen for what he's done with that defense this year as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, D.A., he's always been a heck of a, you know, D.C., the Saints fan have probably been more upset so as a head coach. But, hey, that's another subject, another subject. Catherine, we want to thank you so much.
Day.
Yeah, we want to thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time to talk about the Saints, the NFL, and, you know, offseason ahead for this team. You can find her on X at @Cat_Terrell and have a great offseason. Hopefully the weather is great today and tomorrow and the rest of the offseason, and, you know, hopefully things go well for you.
You guys as well. I know I'll enjoy watching some football this weekend.
No problem at all. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kat.
Yeah, I mean, she's pretty much spot on. She covers this team, you know, with the best of them, you know, pretty much at every practice, every game, and you know, that analysis is as true as it can be.
Yeah, I think the thing she brought up, that's like the wide receiver position is fascinating. The running, there's a lot of positions on the offense for this team that are fascinating. I want to get into that as we go forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, for me, you got to add some guys. That's what it comes down to. Right. I mean, you can say, nah, we're good. Nah, you got to add some talent.
Weapons.
I mean, you got to add some weapons. And
teams need weapons.
You got to have it. We're going to take a quick break here. Give us a call, 504-260-1870. You're listening to Deuce and Jeff on Fans and the Pro. Welcome back to Fans and the Pro. Deuce and Jeff here with you, wrapping up this first hour. Another hour to go. Just had a great conversation with Catherine Terrell with ESPN. And so just giving her thoughts on the playoffs as well as the Saints season. Jeff, I know we've kind of bounced around a little bit from the Pelicans to the Saints to the playoffs and the college football. But I know that you have a text.
Got a text.
That you want to read, and let's get some thought on, and so I'll let you go ahead.
Yeah, y'all hit us up, 504-260-1870. Let us know what you think. 7662 says, Tyler needs a stud tight end who can throw a block and then run a good route. Tyler could throw my grandma open if he had time. Pretty athletic grandma. So we're fine for now at wide receiver. I guess so my question to you, A, what are your thoughts on Juwan Johnson's season? Career highs, targets, catches, yards. I still find myself wanting more at times, but what would you say the priority is for this team in terms of adding another weapon at tight end?
You've got to add one because of injuries.
Yeah,
at that position.
Well, he did play all 17 games.
Not just him, but the way
everyone
this
else.
Team, yeah, the way that this team plays 12 personnel and 13 personnel, which is three tight ends / two tight ends and 12, they've got to add some more guys in there. And so the question becomes, at what level do you want to spend money when you talk about, all right, are we going to invest a second round? Are we going to invest a third round? High of a priority is it for you in that sense? Because I do think that they will add a receiver to the room. But the question becomes, is that via free agency or is that via draft? And then the other question you have to look at, the long-term health of Chris Olave.
Yeah.
That's something that you have to consider. Even before the latest scare with the blood clot, the concussions you had to consider. So, if that's going to be the case, is that a receiver that I'm drafting in the first round?
You know, I guess this is probably a longer conversation to be had around Olave and the extension. But, you know, so two things. One, I would like to see the Saints change their philosophy on drafting tight ends, because I just don't understand why you don't draft the position. The last time you drafted a tight end was Adam Trautman in the third round. Prior to that, the last time you drafted a tight end, third round or higher, was Jimmy Graham, and they have not drafted a tight end ahead of the third round in that span, and that just doesn't make sense to me with all these tight ends coming out of college. But my question is, when you look at Chris Olave, is that something that you expect them to try to bake into his contract if when they eventually come to terms on an extension, which I expect to happen? Is that a situation where you think the team's going to try to maybe work some health protections into that contract language?
Yeah, I mean, the language is there anyway, to an extent,
right?
But yes, there will be incentives, so to speak.
Yeah, it, like playtime incentives type stuff.
Well,
yeah.
not necessarily just playtimes. Hey, maybe even
availability,
availability. You know, if you're up for this game. Not necessarily even play time. I mean, because sometimes you can't control.
Sure.
You can't control, we just talked about it, what sets that are called. You know, if I'm not the receiver in 13 personnel, now my play time is maybe affected. Even though he's your starting receiver, that's something that may not be affected or you can't control. The other one that, hey, there will be, I don't want to call it small incentives for amount of catches, amount of yards.
Sure.
That's in every contract. But I think availability from a, hey, you're up on a 53 this game, you may see a little bit more heavy lean in that sense. Now, I agree with you. I do think that they get a deal done. Now, we can debate about, hey, it's going to be towards the Ja'Marr Chase side or it's going to be probably top 10-ish side.
to me, I think you look at Garrett Wilson's deal, and if you can come south of that, which is about 32 a year, I feel like that's a win. Because you look at their numbers for over 4 years, they're almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jets paid Garrett Wilson. So if I'm Chris's agent, I'm like, well, look at this. That's kind of
hard to argue with, but my counter would be, who's been available? How many games?
I think Garrett's played 58, Chris has played 55.
Right there, close together.
Yeah.
You're listening to Fans in the Pro on WWL. Give us a call, 504-260-1870. Hour number one down, one more to go.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome to Fans in a Pro with Deuce and Jeff. Mike is out today, not available.
You are the only pro on this panel.
Yeah, well, we're both pros. We're fans and the pros on this panel. And, you know, an hour to go here on the show. Just got a lot to get to. You know, we'll have Sam Brookhouse will join us, former Tulane linebacker, sports senior NFL analyst, and data scientist. Talk a little bit about the college football weekend as well as the NFL weekend and you know, just in general. Jeff, we've talked a little bit about this Saints team, and you know, while we're here, let me get to Bobby on the call. Give us a call, 504-260-1870. Bobby, I want to get your thoughts, because I think that you're looking towards the draft, and here's the thing we've got to remember when you talk about the draft. The draft is after free agency.
Mm-hmm.
So the Saints and other teams will have an opportunity to maybe fill some holes before the draft.
Yeah.
So I want to get your thoughts. I just want to throw that out there first. Bobby said, I don't care. And yeah, I hear
you. How you doing, Bobby?
Yeah, I'd like I think running back and defensive end would be a nice first-round division for us. Pick up right there. And, I mean, in my few years, I believe that we're lacking most in those two fields right there. So,
you want to add a running back and or defensive end with the first round pick?
Yes, sir.
You know, what would your thoughts be on the Saints going in on a running back early in the, like, with the number eight pick? Because typically I would say, like, I hate the idea in terms of positional value, but I do think if you feel like you have a quarterback, putting a stud running back next to that quarterback feels a lot different than, say, the Giants putting Saquon next to old man Eli.
Yeah, no, Bobby, thank you. Thank you for the call, and we're going to discuss it here now. For me personally, I'm not a fan.
No?
Not at eight.
Yeah, I'm not either. As much as I want Jeremiah Love on the Saints uniform.
I wasn't a fan last year, even at nine.
Yeah.
For the Saints last year, and I know they worked
with
out.
Genty, yeah, with Genty. Genty had gotten there.
With Genty. Yeah. And for me, it's not because I like both of those guys. But for me, unless you hit on everything else that you need in free agency, then it almost feel like it's a luxury.
It is a luxury. Yeah. And it's like, here's the thing. This is how I've always phrased it. It's like, if a stud running back can make a good team into a great team.
Correct.
A stud running back is not going to make a mediocre team into a great team.
Until a great team.
They might make a fringe playoff team into a playoff team.
Correct.
But that's not what you're trying to be as a franchise. You're trying to win a Super Bowl. Like, your long-term game is, how can we be the best team?
Well, but from a short and long-term,
yeah,
I've got to be able to build either around him or know that I have a quarterback that can – it'll be good, but I just don't like it at eight.
Yeah, I mean, like
I don't like it at eight. Maybe 15. I like it a little bit better.
Like
a
Jameer at 12. Like, I feel like that was the kind of sweet spot of you have a team that you feel like can win, and then you add a running back mid first.
Mid first. I mean, 12 is probably still a little high for me.
Yeah,
I still.
They also had two first round picks.
But here's the other thing. Who else was in the backfield with him?
David Montgomery.
So I had somebody else that he could lean on.
At the time, wasn't it Jamal? I feel like that was they signed David Montgomery that year to pair with him.
Free agency.
I could be wrong.
Picked him up in free agency.
Yeah.
Picked him up in free agency. I mean, but like, here's the thing. He's not considered the lead guy. And I guess here in New Orleans, we will know then by the situation with Alvin.
Yeah.
So when you draft a back, he's either going to be your lead guy or he's going to be a complimentary player. I can't take complimentary player at 8.
At number 8, yeah, you're right.
I cannot take complimentary player at 8. And like you just said, is this team good enough if we just add that one piece, missing piece, being a tailback, is he going to get you to the playoffs or even to be able to compete to where you can get to the Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, like look at the two guys, Saquon and Bijan, right? Very similar players, very similar impact. Both have been extraordinary as NFL players, but Bijan didn't have the impact you needed him to have until he went to the Eagles, right?
Saquon.
Bijan eventually will go to another team and win a Super Bowl. Leonard Fournette's another example. Like, what did Lenny do with the Jaguars? He was good. He went to the Bucs and won a Super Bowl.
I never got to the playoffs by myself.
Yeah.
I was successful as all get out. I never got to the playoffs until we got Reggie.
And here's the thing. When you were drafted, running back value was a completely different.
I knew I was going to touch it 25 to 30 times.
Yes.
As a back dish, if you get 20 touches, you're I mean, you're rubbing your hands.
Yeah.
I mean, because you just don't get the touches. The value is now put on the quarterback, and so I get it, just because it's easier to throw through the air. But the teams are shifting back to running the football, even if it's two guys. But you know, for me, on where this team is, if I had the choice to get a running back at 8. Or defensive end at 8, I'm getting a DN.
What I will say is this is the first draft in a long time that I didn't feel like need is going to drive the Saints' decision-making. Because like you look at, okay, what do you need that you could only get at the top of the first round, which is offensive tackle, stud edge rusher, but you still feel like you have edge rushers,
I like
right?
the guys. I don't have to reach
right.
for
so
a guy.
So you can truly go – like. Teams say best player available, but it's almost always best player available at
that
a position
that we need.
Right?
That we need.
they cut that part off the end, but it's almost always there. This year, I genuinely feel like, you know, think of it a couple years ago, there had not been a single defensive player drafted when the Saints went on the clock. And they ended up with Taliese Fuaga because they desperately needed a tackle. He may have been the top player on their board, but you also had an option of saying, hey, we could take the top defensive player in the entire draft. But it wasn't, but you needed the tackle. You ended up with a tackle. Like, if that happened this year, who's to say? They're just like, well, he might have been in a position of need, but such a talented player has fallen to us. We're going to take him because we don't desperately need a tackle or whatever else.
I would be surprised, though, if you take a tackle. This year,
I would be too, but I also wouldn't put it past him.
I would put it past him this year. I would think that you now. I don't want to reach.
Yeah,
I don't want to go and reach. And you got a project, and it may take you doing something that you don't like to do, trading back. But
it would signal that they're planning to move someone like Fuaga to guard.
Well, which would probably be didn't we just get down that road?
Yeah. We did.
Yeah, and so I don't see that being the case with Fuaga. I think he can hold his own. You know, the biggest thing for the big man, he's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay healthy. I mean, so.
Felt bad for him this year. Like, every time he came back from an ankle injury, he hurt the other ankle.
hurt a knee, or my back has always been hurting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for him, he's going to have to figure that out. How can I, you know, make sure that I'm healthy across the board? But when I look at it at 8, you're in a pretty good position, whether it's an impact player that could help your skill guys or in the trenches. I mean, we can talk about how this team has built itself during the trenches. Is all, you know, they've done a good job, but I would be surprised if it's truly a guard and or tackle at 8.
I do also feel like, you know, we talk about it would have been cool if they beat the Falcons week 18. You know what would feel a lot different? 11.
11.
Because that's where they'd be drafting if they won that game.
Well, you're truly in no man's land,
right,
too, though.
Right. 8 feels like you can get, especially with the quarterbacks at the top, like it feels like you can pretty much go any direction. At 11, it's like, oh, we're just going to sit here and wait and see what happens.
So do you think Oregon quarterback does come in?
Yes. If you're going to be number 2 in the draft, if you're getting draft grades back at the high first round, you got to go.
Yeah, I mean, and I know he's talking about to go to the Jets.
I don't think that actually happens as much as people like – you know, maybe it does. Maybe I'm crazy, but it's still, you're going to play football in New York City.
Like, and tell me how much money is guaranteed to me?
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
We're not talking NIL. I know Phil Knight is running things out there in Oregon, but yeah, we're I think that you'll make that up in New York on right. endorsements alone.
The idea that people don't want to go play for the Jets is silly. Like, I get it. They've been bad for a long time, but
just think about New York and the endorsements.
If you're going to be good as a professional athlete, you need to be arrogant enough to think, I'm going to turn this team around.
I can win in New York, even with the Jets.
Because if you're not, then you shouldn't do it in the first place.
No, yeah, you don't have the right attitude. You're listening to Jeff and Deuce on Fans and a Pro on WWL. Welcome back to Fans and a Pro. Deuce and Jeff Nowak with me. And I know we have Sam Bruckhaus with us. And Sam, former Tulane linebacker, senior sports analyst, NFL analyst, and data scientist. And Sam, you gotta tell me here, are you just a numbers guy? And you obviously played the game, but are you just a numbers guy? Is it analytics with numbers, or what's the driving force behind it? You gotta tell me.
Hey, look, I gotta tell you, they teach you a lot at good old Tulane University. And I may be from Lake Charles, but I like the numbers. I was a computer science major at Tulane, but I also played linebacker. So I have an understanding of what's going on the field, the schemes, what the coaches are trying to do, what the players may be trying to do as well. You know, I got J.J. McCleskey. He gave me some of that. I know, Deuce, you're friends with old coach J.J. a little bit. But the numbers are important, too, and that's what I've been studying for the last few years. We're doing a great job over here at Sumer Sports of providing live data. You can check that out tomorrow, sumersports.com/live. But I like to blend them both.
Well, to blend them both, most individuals can't do it. Either they didn't play at the level that you did, and if you listen to Coach JJ, Coach JJ getting you in some trouble over there. But you know that's another conversation to have. But at Sumer Sports, is it more analytics driven, or kind of tell me, are we leaning on history? What data are we truly following?
Yeah. So the way that we like to approach it is we have a full team of scouts and coaches and players that have really seen the game and been the game for a very long time. In fact, previously, you know, Thomas Dimitroff, who is now a senior advisor for the Saints, he was my boss last year before he jumped over to the Saints. Now we got guys like Mike Mayock, Mike McCagnon, former general managers, and they understand what is important about the game. But what we've identified about technology is that we can better identify and more closely define those important things using computers and using computer vision. And so we work very closely with our scouts, with our ex-coaches and ex-players to really define what is important about this game, implement it in a way that will be objective every single time, and then adjust that to make sure we're capturing the right thing. That's what we like to do over here at Sumer Sports.
You know, Sam, I remember talking to you right after the draft, and y'all put out a great draft guide. If anyone hasn't checked it out, you got to go look at it. It's incredible. And we talked a lot about Tyler Shuck, and you know, talked kind of like about, you know, Bo Nix the year before. You know, his superpower was kind of sack avoidance and avoiding negative plays. And I think that's, you know, we didn't see the sack avoidance from Tyler that I was expecting to see, but I do think we saw kind of the negative play avoidance from him. And that allowed him to have success as a rookie. I'm just curious, as you go through all the rookies this year and you could look at, hey, okay, rookie of the year, candidacy, that sort of thing, what did you see from Tyler Shuck throughout those 9 starts this year?
Yeah, I think what Tyler was able to show, as you mentioned, the sack rate was not particularly great for him. When we discussed guys like Jackson Dart, for example, that was a guy who we talked about being kind of one read and scramble guy, but he was able to make it happen. He was actually in that range, ranked 32nd in sack rate this year at about 8% of dropbacks in which he took a sack. But really where he showed up was his ability to make plays within the offense. You know, in the last couple of games, we do a tracking system using artificial intelligence that looks at every tenth of a second and looks at the relationship between every player on the field, compares that back to 2016. And he had several blue chip games. So I think an understanding of the offense, an understanding of his offensive line, and an ability to get the ball out there to Chris Olave, who had a true bounce back season, I think should be a candidate for comeback player of the year. His ability to make those plays is really what separated him, and that's why it showed up in our, you know, second by second tracking.
Sam, and I got to ask you, you know, you talk about this data, and, you know, that was something that 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I don't want to say it was unheard of, but it definitely wasn't used as much. How much buy-in do you have from older coaches that, you know, they don't want to look at that? They want, hey, I need to see what the player looks like. I need to tell me, you know, I need to see it with my eyes. How much buy-in do you have from some of the older guys that the numbers tell tell you a lot?
Yeah, I mean, really all the numbers is trying to do is take what they were already doing, make it quicker, and make it so that less mistakes are made. You know, we're all human. We all make mistakes. And so I think the way that I like to explain it, especially being an ex-player, is like when you really look at what Sean Payton and Bill Belichick were doing, charting every play, grading every play, looking at every player throughout the play, those were really all analytics. All we're doing is describing it and trying to make it more process-oriented and more systematized. And I think when you get those ideas and you're able to outlay that this is going to save you time and this is really going to encapsulate what you're already saying about the game, I think the old coaches really buy in. Take, for example, a statistic like expected points added. We all know that if a player has 100 yards in a game rushing, but you know, they got all those yards rushing when they were down 30, but that's not going to make a massive difference in the game. What expected points added does is include things like the clock and include things like, is it third and one or third and two, and put everything in terms of points. And I think when coaches start to get those explanations and start to see the payoffs from guys like Drake May, for example, who was very high in expected points added this year and projected to be preseason given what we had seen, I think when you start to see those payoffs and you just add a little bit of explanation to in terms of football language, it really makes a huge difference.
So I want to know, can your data tell me, all right, I got a player, he's a little winded. At 15 carries, he tends to do this, or at 15 carries, he tends to do this a little bit better. Does the data tell me that? Does the data give me that information, whether it's, you know, his numbers start to fall off or he's gotten stronger as a runner after 15 carries?
Yeah, so that's a great example. That's what we'd like to call like a break-even point or something like that. So you're going to go into that data and you're going to try to get a sense of, you know, where the fall off may happen, where the expected points added per play may drop off, or the yards per carry. But really what we like to do, what's very interesting about this, and it's great for college, obviously, going college to pro, is looking at how fast these players are actually moving, you know, because we're having them on a tenth of a second by tenth of a second motion. So a great example of this is a player like Christian McCaffrey this year, who early on in the season and throughout the season, despite the fact that he is an Offensive Player of the Year candidate, was really not doing it on the ground a lot. He was in the deep 20s in terms of efficiency running the ball. And when we really took it back to look at what was going on, his speed had dropped off quite a bit. What's the difference? Kyle Shanahan recognized that early on in the season, starts using him as a slot receiver, maintaining more of his quickness and his ability to break than his top level speed. And then all of a sudden you got a guy who is getting 23-24% of targets and is a absolute weapon, just a slightly different weapon than he was before. Using that tracking data and using some of that information can give us a sense of that early on in the season so you can make adjustments. And I think that's why the 49ers are one of the best teams in the league right now, because they identified it and they made a move.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned kind of the data, and I remember I had someone reply to a tweet and was like, but how do you know, you know, by looking at yards per carry, whether it was like third and one or fourth and one? And I was like, well, let me introduce you to my good friend EPA, because that's literally what it's there for.
Exactly.
But, you know, I'm just curious, as you kind of look through this season and going into the playoffs, are there any kind of, you know, spots in the data that you've noticed, like trends in the league changing? It does seem like, you know, the teams that can run the ball successfully have gotten back to having the advantage, where for years it seemed like it was a passing league. I don't know if it's a passing league anymore. It's a kind of dump off league now. But, you know, are there any kind of large trends that you've noticed throughout the course of this season?
So I think the first trend that you kind of highlight a little bit, and I do think it's a bit of an anomaly, is that quarterback play was down. As stated, we have metrics at Sumer Sports that watch every tenth of a second on every play, and we have that going back to 2016. This year, we only really had one player who we thought would have been worthy of an All-Pro award at the quarterback position across all quarterbacks this year, and that was Drake May. Everyone else, we thought maybe they're an impact starter, a Pro Bowl-level guy in previous years, but really only Drake May played up to that level. And I think, you know, there's a multitude of reasons of what's going on, but I think it was a little bit anomalous. You have guys like Trevor Lawrence, who got hot at the end of the season, Tyler Shuck, who got hot at the end of the season. But I think we did have an anomalous year at the quarterback position, and I think that the data caught that as well. But what I thought was really unique, and you'll see this heavily in some of these NFC games, is coaches have started to use personnel diversity, particularly big bodies at the tight end position, in order to actually open up the passing game. Take a team like the Seahawks, the number one team in the NFC. They're actually pretty not good. They're kind of putrid at running the ball in the bottom of the league, but they do it a lot, and they do it with big bodies on the field like A.J. Barner. They like to use a fullback from time to time. Elijah Arroyo, the rookie, you'll see out there as well. And what they're really trying to do is get teams to overcompensate for the danger of the run so that Sam Darnold can drop back and hit Jaxon Smith-Njigba on some of those big plays. I, for one, think they may be running it a little bit too much, which takes me to the Los Angeles Rams, one of the best offenses. They will trot out three tight ends. Guys like you see Parkinson out there. Higbee may be coming back for the playoffs. You see a big collection of three tight ends, and they love to throw the ball out of it. And they have Puka Nacua. They have Kyron Williams back there. And that is what Sean McVay has really locked in on this season. The idea that he can put three tight ends out there that can block but also receive, and that he thinks other teams will put out linebackers. He likes the matchups there, and he eviscerates them with Matthew Stafford in the passing game.
Sam, you just talked about a little bit of college football. You got to tell me your thoughts tonight on the Indiana-Oregon matchup and just what the data tells me, but also what this Tulane Green Wave linebacker tells me. That's from Lafayette over there. You from Lafayette or you from Brobridge? Where are you from?
I'm from Lake Charles.
Well, Lake Charles. I'm sorry.
We all 337.
Well, yeah, you Boudin country still over there. So I do apologize, but come on, tell me what the data tells me.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about this game in particular is you're going to see the number one rated and number two rated quarterback in the draft. Both of these guys can really play. But the interesting thing is you're not going to see explosive plays. At least I don't think so, and we haven't seen it in previous games from either the Indiana offense or the Oregon offense. So if you're a betting man, I think the under could be an interesting value play for you in this game, because both of these teams rely on precision and play-by-play keeping the chains moving. You're not going to see them trying to get these big, huge plays time after time. They're going to trust in their quarterbacks, trust that they can find completions, they can run the ball effectively and get 4 or 5 yards, be able to control the game. So it's going to be really interesting to see who can truly do that. I think Indiana has a slight bit more talent at the wide receiver and cornerback positions, so that's why I'm a little bit more inclined to go with Indiana. But Oregon has some big names up front as well. You think of a guy like Isaiah Worlds, who is very well regarded in the scouting community, will probably be a round two or round three pick if he decides to go to the draft. They could be able to push the front as well. I like Indiana in this game, but I really think this is going to be a true precision matchup that will be won by whichever team can keep the chains moving and go on long drives.
Yeah, and just to dig into that a little bit more, you know, obviously you mentioned the quarterbacks, Fernando Mendoza, Dante Moore. I assume it's in that order when you talk about the top two rated quarterbacks. But, you know, what is it that Fernando Mendoza does that makes him the best quarterback in the country?
Yeah, so it's exactly that. His ability to keep the chains moving and find completions. You know, when you talk to these quarterbacks, and nobody knows this better than Deuce, a lot of the times people want to chunk the ball deep down the field, take risks, but if you're able to just find completions piece by piece, we found that it's very difficult to do, but the guys that can do it at an extremely high level. I think that's why people like Fernando Mendoza, you add in that he has a little bit of mobility as well, can run quite a bit, make some plays with his legs. I do worry a little bit about his ability to avoid sacks as a regard of that. But I think as a result, you mix that size and a little bit of that mobility. My comp for him is Jared Goff with a slightly worse arm, but slightly more mobility. I think that's why he is the number one right now.
Sam, I appreciate it, my man. We could talk sports and numbers and whether you really learned some out there for JJ or whether you was doing some in this this numbers class that you've kind of created. And tell us a little bit more about Sumer Sports and, you know, just where the people can go and look at the data and study the data, you know, and, hey, to do what they need to do with the data.
Yeah, sumersports.com/live tomorrow. Get all your stats for the game there. And, hey, Coach JJ was teaching me how to be a five rundown and hammerhead down on kickoff. So shout out to Coach JJ too.
See that you were in great company until you just told me that. I did not want to know that, but no, I'm messing with you. Thank you so much for the time and appreciate it and good luck. You know, in growing what you guys are doing sounds fantastic, and I got to look into it a little bit more.
Thank y'all very much.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, I mean that's where league, not just the NFL, but that's where leagues are going. I mean, I talked about the old coaches. A lot of them are slowly buying into it. But you look at some of the teams that have really, really good analytics, and, I mean, they're buzzing in.
Well, we used to, you know, just to background, so Eric Eager, who helped start PFF, he is one of the people who helped start Sumer Sports. Mm-hmm. He is now no longer with Sumer Sports because he's working with the Panthers.
Correct.
And, so, well, like,
and Thomas as well.
Yeah, there's a reason that these teams are bringing these guys in because it's important information. And, you know, the resistance, you know, everyone wants to talk about, oh, right, go with your gut. You know, like, you got to balance that. You know, like, you can't use it to make all your decisions, but you do want your decisions to be backed up by the data more often than not.
Yeah, well, and, you know, sometimes I have to tell me what my eyes see as well.
Right.
My eyes going to tell a story maybe the numbers can't tell, but I'm probably got to lean onto the numbers a little bit more, particularly if I have the infrastructure in place.
Yep, no doubt.
This is Fans in the Pro, Deuce and Jeff here. We're going to take a quick break. 504-260-1870. Shoot us a text or give us a call. Welcome back to Fans in the Pro. Deuce and Jeff here with you, talking a little bit about college football, the NFL playoffs, the Pelicans, who tip off in 24 minutes as they take on the Washington Wizards up in Washington. And then I think the Pelicans come home. They were over in Atlanta, I know, a couple days ago, and they're up in Washington. And so we just had Sam Bruckhaus on Sumer Sports talking a little bit about the data, and I think he has sent Jeff down the rabbit hole with the data. So I'm going to see what he has for us.
Well, no, this is more of an old school stat. Like, we all agree on this stat that it's important, but we never talk about it. Everyone, you talk about defensive line, which I think the nickname for the Saints defensive line when they inevitably bring Cam Jordan back, we can call it an old and a young, because you got the old guy and you got
and a young,
the young,
or young and restless.
Yeah, you go. But, like, we've all talked about, okay, Cam Jordan, 10.5 sack season. Like, that's incredible, 35 years old, to have that type of resurgent season. You know, he was tied for 8th in the NFL in tackles for loss.
Overall?
Yes. He had 15 tackles for loss, that tied for 8th in the NFL. And for whatever reason, we talk about sacks, and we never talk about TFLs. Why is a sack for negative 2 yards more valuable than a tackle of a running back for negative 2 yards? The answer is it's not. It's worth the same. We just talk about it more when it's a sack because it's a sexier number. But just for perspective, Cam did that on 589 defensive snaps. He's tied with Danielle Hunter for the Texans. 728 defensive snaps.
Yeah, I was about to say who plays probably
right.
Doesn't come out the game.
So you're talking about a guy who had 10.5 sacks, 15 tackles for loss. All on, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say he's a part-time player, but he's not a full-time player, mm-hmm. right? Like, he's in a rotation.
He's in a rotation.
Way more than a lot of these guys toward the top of this list. And just the guys ahead of Cam Jordan on this list, Alex Highsmith, Danielle Hunter, well, they're tied, right? So Jeff Simmons, Eric Wilson, Tuli Tuipulotu, Will Anderson, Brian Burns, Max Crosby, Myles Garrett. Like, that's the list of names that he's right there with. Now, Myles Garrett has 33.
Yeah, I was about to say his should be astronomical just because.
Absurd.
Yeah, when you get, but think about it though, you have 23 sacks.
Yeah.
You know, then, you know, 10 more tackle for losses is not out of the question, particularly when you talk about run game. But, you know, it tells you also a little bit about Houston, because it sounds they're two defensive ends or
Will outside Anderson and Danielle Hunter.
Yeah, outside incredible. Linebackers. Yeah. I mean, however you want to list them, both of those guys are in the top five.
Trust me, watching that defense play, it's stunning. Like, I would not be surprised if they win the Super Bowl just based on defense alone. Like, that, the way they have built that team up is incredible.
Well, look at their head coach.
Yes.
Yeah. Look at.
It's built in someone's image, and that man is D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah, and so what he sees or what he thought of what defense should be, that's how they've built that team. And you kind of hit it on your quarterback, and so even though he probably hadn't played as well, I mean, because you got to remember it. At the beginning of the year, you didn't even know if they would make the playoffs, that being the Houston Texans. And, you know, they're having to travel because the Steelers won a division. But, I mean, they were in the mix completely as one of the better teams. I think they went on some crazy streak at the end as far as to win games, that being Houston. But defensively is where they make their money.
Yeah, I mean, what they started the season, they started the season 0-3.
Yeah, it was ugly. I remember it. It was ugly, and then there was a stretch in there where Stroud was hurt with concussions, and it was like, is this guy going to come back and play at all?
And Davis Mills kept him afloat, so you got to give him credit.
Well, he kept him afloat, but I don't know if they won any games. Maybe won a game or two with David Mills, but he kept him competent.
Let's see. I think they may have beat the 49ers with Davis Mills. Let's see.
Okay.
I have to look. But either way, yeah. And, you know, C.J. Stroud, it's funny. You talk about the young rookie quarterbacks, and they're all the rage. And then C.J. Stroud's kind of fascinating because he's kind of – now he's just a dude, right?
But with that team, you can be a dude.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. You don't have to be the second coming, because that's what we had C.J. Stroud after his rookie year. He was the second coming of all of those great quarterbacks that, you know, were kind of retiring, and he was the one that was going to step in. And now it's just like, Stroud's good, but, you know, look at the number one pick over in Jacksonville finally playing somewhat, you know, really, really good. Or, you know, look at the Indy quarterback that is playing really, really, really good, Daniel Jones, and then he gets hurt.
Yep.
You know, and so C.J. Stroud, Cam Ward is the man of the division, and look at who's in the playoffs.
We do got to, you know, put some respect on Davis Mills' name, because they went 3-1 with him as a starter.
They did go 3-1. Yeah. Well, hey, David, I'm sorry. I was not familiar with your game.
Backup quarterbacks matter, man. When you have a guy, like, that saved their season.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Right? Yeah, that definitely saved their season, because
they're not in the playoffs if you go 1-3.
No, not at all. And so, yeah, David Mills is a guy that's been around for a while as well, but he knows what he's doing.
Yep, he started games. Right?
I thought that their record was a lot worse though than 3-1.
I did too. But
I'll take if a quarter of my season and my backup comes in and he gives me three victories.
And the game they lost was to the Broncos.
He gives me three victories. Yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah.
This is Fans in the Pro with Deuce and Jeff on WWL. Welcome back to Fans in the Pro, and it's Deuce McAllister and Jeff Nowak, who has been with me while Mike is out sick. And Jeff, I know that we don't have long, but I want to get your perspective on what the Saints need to do this upcoming offseason. You know, I know we have, like we talked earlier, you have free agency really before the draft, but we've got the Senior Bowl, what, in 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah, I need to book a hotel room.
You don't want to ride the train? The Mardi Gras train. The Mardi Gras train just added another
train
seat.
I could ride the train, but I think they would frown upon me sleeping at the train station.
That might be true.
I might take the train now that you mention it. I hadn't even thought about that.
You get the scenic view and ride over to Mobile. They just added another train for Mardi Gras season.
We're running out of time here, Deuce. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Important stuff to talk about. You know, so there's a lot of stuff. Like, I need this team to keep getting better. I need the work to get done, and that's what I trust will happen. I think that the vibes are really good, and there's going to be a lot of great off-season work. I know Tyler Shuck's going to arrange some throwing sessions, that sort of stuff. But to me, I think the biggest thing is I need to figure out the running back position. And no, you don't need to take a running back number 8 overall, but, like, what is it? Where is Alvin Kamara at? Is he going to play another season? I don't think he's going to get traded. I don't think he'd even allow that to happen if he came down to it. But, you know, what is he, and what is his role? Kendre Miller, you know, who knows, right? Like, you feel terrible for the kid, because I feel like he did everything right this season. He still had a knee injury to end his year. Where are you at with him? Devin Neal, I thought, was really strong in what he was able to do, but, you know, what is his ceiling? Do you have any movers and shakers at the running back position, or is it going to be a committee? Like, to me, that's, you know, obviously offensive line, something you got to shore up, but, you know, we talked a lot about how the run game is kind of making a comeback in the NFL, and I need this team to support its rookie quarterback with an effective run game. And at this point, I just have no idea what it's going to look like.
Yeah, and I don't have that answer for you,
right?
Because the same questions you have, I probably have them as well. I'm okay with by committee if that's the approach that they take, but you've got to get some juice, not necessarily just in that running back room, but you got to get some juice on that offense. You got to have some guys that has some juice. They got some speed that, hey, I can get him this touch and 40 yards, it's over. So that's just a couple of things that I want to see. There's a lot more, you know. We got to get out of here, like you said. But if you get a chance, take that train, man. I ain't rode it yet, but I read about it.
All right, I'll look into it.
It's been fantastic. Thank you so much. It's been an outstanding year. Thanks for everybody that's been a part. This is Fans in the Pro with Deuce and Jeff.
Who dat?